Hi, everyone. It's Dr. Denise, and this is the Dr. Denise Show. This is Diva Discussions, and I'm honored and excited. I have Dr. Basha Mukherjee here. Dr. Basha, I have watched you and what you're up to on Instagram. I'm going to give a little bio about you in a minute, but I just want to thank you for being here.
The pleasure's all mine. Thank you for inviting me.
So I want to just let you know, you and I spoke briefly over the weekend, but your energy, the love you're putting out in the universe is something that I've had my eye on. And so everyone, Dr. Basha Mukherjee, she's a medical director. Doctor, oh my God, I did it again. How funny. You know what, everyone? I'm just making her a medical director. Do you like that, Basha?
I love it.
I already see you as so powerful. So I think that's what it is. And so Dr. Basha, you have been on the front lines. And at the time you've been on the front lines in your training, you were Miss England 2019 to 2021. And I'm actually kind of blown away as to how you've been able to wear those hats during this time.
I mean, look who's talking. You're much the same in terms of, you know, from our chat over the weekend, it sounded like you've got so many hats yourself. And I think that's something that's quite common that we see in people in the medical field. I think it's really important within our field to have those different interests just to ground us and, take us away sometimes from the realities that we face at work every day. And I think it makes us better clinicians having those varied interests. So I say, you know, there's a lot of doctors who are probably very much in a similar position to me.
So take us on your journey. I mean, first of all, I want to thank you. I am on the front lines from a mental health standpoint, but you've been on the front lines in the hospital during the pandemic. And I want to personally not only thank you, but this is a shout out to everyone on the front lines in any way. We're just coming out of this pandemic, and I think it's been exhausting for many.
Thank you as well. I think this pandemic has had a multifold effect, not just for the COVID patients, but everybody, and even mental health perspective. I was working in a psychiatry unit during the pandemic, and we actually had a couple of outbreaks within our ward, and I saw how difficult it was to manage our patients, our acutely unwell acute psychiatric patients during the pandemic, considering that visitation was put on hold. And, you know, some of our service users, they are, you know, very much reliant on that contact with their family members, with their key workers, and, you know, having that freedom to go out into the fresh air and leave the ward and, you know, have that mobility. And I think I was fortunate enough to have seen the effect that the pandemic had not only on COVID patients, but on different aspects of the healthcare system, including mental health. So I would not like to take away at all from people who are working with mental health and other aspects of the healthcare system. And they did just as much a fantastic job as anybody else that was working with COVID patients.
I think as a humanity, we are rolling out of this pandemic, and I call it the pulse of consciousness. And I'm finding that people are trying to figure out how to get their bearing. I think we had COVID, then we had the Delta variant, then we had the Omicron. And now it's like, I think people are almost like, quote unquote, over it. But is the pandemic over with us? And how to like just shift gears psychologically, no matter what we do?
100%. I think we've all evolved as a society post this pandemic, and it's really shown how resilient we can be as humans and as a society. So, I mean, the pandemic isn't over. COVID cases are still going up again, but yes, we are moving towards living with COVID. I think going forward, it won't come so much as a shock to our system when something like this, if ever, if it was to happen, happens again. And I think we'll probably be a bit better prepared in facing up to a global pandemic. I mean, God forbid if that was ever to happen again. But I'm just being optimistic, I guess.
Well, you're still, can you give everyone a little bit of an idea of where you're at in your career and what part of the world you're in? I know I'm going to have your bio, but it might be nice just to give everyone a window into your day right now.
Yes, so I am a junior doctor in the UK. I qualified as a doctor from university in 2019 in August. And in the UK, we have the foundation program, which is similar to doing residency. We get rotated around different specialties in hospital and in community, just to get a flavor of, different roles and, just to get an idea of what kind of specialty we would like to go into. So I'm coming towards the end of my foundation training and I'm going into training for family medicine. I'll be starting that in August this year. That includes 3 years of training and that also includes rotating around different specialties, again, just to get that varied understanding because those of you are aware, family medicine is such a mixed bag. You can have absolutely anything walking through the door. Often that is the first point of call that lots of people will have with a medical professional, and they can absolutely bring anything. So it really helps to have that general idea of different aspects of healthcare so you can treat the different demographics of the population, essentially.
So what you mentioned at the beginning of this interview, being a physician and the importance of having hobbies and different interests, how have you managed your mental well-being during this time of the pandemic? And also, we haven't even touched on what it's like being Miss England during this time. So can you give us ideas of your tips and tools for your own wellness that you would like to share with others or people that have been inspirational for you?
I think I would like to start off by saying that a very cliche answer that it was a real roller coaster. I mean, when I started my journey as a doctor, it was overnight around the same time as starting as Miss England. And I think sometimes right at the beginning when you've going into something, you have these ideas and so many sort of aspirations. You want to do this, you want to do that. And that was definitely me. I still remember my first week of working as a doctor and a newly crowned Miss England. I was overwhelmed. It was exhilarating, 100%. This new feeling, you feel this power all of a sudden, you feel responsibility and all eyes on you. And, this was happening in the media for me. And then at work, I was suddenly in charge, or more so it was like, you're responsible for the ward or something like that. The excitement can sometimes get the better of you to the extent where you burn yourself out. And I started to notice that I was struggling to sleep, and I was too involved mentally with everything. And through the course of, my time as a junior doctor, having then had the pandemic hit, and then, having had the different aspects of Miss England, the role of Miss England, I realized the importance of taking a step back and sort of reminding yourself that this isn't a race, it's a marathon. And the importance of sustainability, sustaining yourself, sustaining the body that you have, the mind that you have, and how an exhausted mind and body is unable to put out good work, good energy, good care for other people. I myself have gone through burnout as a medical professional as a result, perhaps, of the pandemic and, generally, being Miss England, everything really is probably a multifold effect. And my recovery from burnout and, at one point it was really, really bad anxiety and depression. I think I learned so much about myself in that recovery process. And now I'm just so much kinder to myself. I just really value this life that I have. I've just really decided to be grateful for the present moment and not always be so focused on goals and running after something else or, you know, next. You know, I'm trying to live in the present moment more. Definitely, that's something that the pandemic has taught me 100%.
You know, I love that. You know, we had just connected a little bit on the phone this weekend and haven't had a chance. I often talk about the moment of now and that gratitude's my secret sauce. And even deciding with your soul beauty and then your physical beauty, there's different series on the Dr. Denise show. And I said, it has to start with diva discussions. And the diva was divine, inspirational, vivacious, and aware. And where you caught my attention on social media, your level of transparency and vulnerability through your social media. And I feel like there's such a groundedness. I can hear it just, and everyone can hear you right here talking. But I just want to say that before I ever met you voice to voice, there's this sense of almost like humility. Has that always been there? Is this even like, do you feel even more humbled by everything you've been through?
I think what's humbled me has been my experiences, because I've been there where I've tried to be somebody else and I've thought of myself as this person who can conquer it all. And even now I have days when I feel, wow, I mean, amazing, and I can do this, I can do that. And then there's days when I feel like a complete loser, and I find myself thinking, I can't do anything. And I think we all probably feel that. And I think social media is so nauseatingly permeated and so full of people always putting out their best version. And I do the same. Like my actual content, I like to put out, you know, I like to have filmed in advance, and I will put them out throughout the week. And maybe the content itself, if you're just watching it, it might just be something funny, something fun, something a bit silly, or even, you know, a nice picture or something. And that, I don't blame people for that. But I like to be transparent about what's actually happening in the actual text bit, especially if someone is reading. And yes, some days I don't feel like writing much because there's nothing going on in my head. But other days I will be very transparent about what's actually going on in my day. And, you know, for me, it's more a case of like a diary entry. And I don't think anybody's life is a, you know, a flat line. You know, flat line in a medical term, it means you're a dead person, you know, and whether it is a high flat line in terms of everything's always good or everything's always bad. So it's never a flat line for anybody. And that's something sometimes I find that social media can be, you know, an illusion, because sometimes we look at people and their content just always looks the same, and everyone's, you know, every day the same things being posted or similar things. It looks a bit flatliney, but that's not the reality. We are full of ups and downs, and that's the beauty of life. And that is what life is essentially, isn't it? So I like to reflect that in my social media.
So this is going to take a bit of a turn, but it actually is integrated into what you mentioned about during the last few years having some mood states that had some anxiety, some depression. Even my own mom a month ago was like, Denise, are you doing okay? I'm like, Mom, I just had 4 patient emergencies. I'm a single mom. I found out, you know, my son's stepdad's not moving back to the USA. And I thought, you know, I'm allowed to have sad days too. So I think that mental health and mental well-being has been on the forefront thanks to some leaders in the world. We're at a new time, but I don't know, would this be okay if I read your post? I want to just do a sacred pause for Miss USA that passed away. I think that when I read your feed and then I wrote something, do you want to do a pause on what it was like when you found out about her no longer being here? Sacred pause.
100%. Let's do that.
Can I read your feed or should I?
Please, please. Yes,
okay.
Please.
I'm going to read yours and then I'll read mine because, did you ever meet her?
I didn't actually. I believe she might have been the candidate for Miss Universe. I'm not sure, but that's what I think, because it's Miss America that goes on to do Miss World and Miss USA that does Miss Universe. It's slight like variations on the title. So I don't think I actually met her, no. But I think I was aware of her because the year that Miss World, I did Miss World, we had her be, she was a black queen, and then Miss World was a black queen, Miss Universe was a black queen. So it was really a special time, especially for people of colour, for the, you know, the recognition and, you know, the representation that the pageantry industry had shown for people of colour.
And I just want to, since we're talking about that, you are the very first Miss England that's Indian, right?
Yes, that's right.
Wow. Wow. So I am going to just take a moment. This is regarding Chesley Crist, who passed away from suicide on January 30th. And one of the reasons why I was also just so touched by you is just the way you honored her. So I just was looking up something else, but I don't know if you have your feed, but I'm going to read what you wrote. And I actually wrote a prayer the day this happened. The way I understand the universe, it's so, so sad that she's no longer here with us. But this is an example of someone that's beautiful, gorgeous, at the top of her career. And much of what you said, Dr. Basha, about your humility of, you know, just being grateful for the moment, dealing with at times in the last few years as a doctor, being a little bit fatigued at times, I can relate. Some sadness we share with our patients and with ourselves. And my heart really, you know, I felt very connected to Chesley, although I never met her. Here's what you wrote that day. The last few days, my feed has been flooded about this beautiful soul who no longer is. I've been thinking long and hard about this incident and why, unlike everyone on social media, it took me so long to make a post about it. I think I have the answer now. It's because we, including I, have become numb to these incidents on social media. Every time a tragic event like this happens, we all enthusiastically post about it to seem relevant and to get on the bandwagon. It's all rife until it's over in a few days and we've all moved on to the next new TikTok trend. The same old toxic pressure of social media to keep pumping out content and consume the same at a rate that's making us into mere machines who are slowly losing all of our individuality, our empathy, our spark as a species. We keep saying let's talk mental health, but we as a society do not for once nurture an environment for good mental health. It's difficult to talk mental health when no one is listening. It's difficult to be mentally healthy when we have all force created a world whose attention span is a mere 15 seconds long. Miss USA 2019 isn't the first and won't be the last we have lost to mental health. But what we can do is change this tragic pattern by changing ourselves, is to change ourselves. Listen, empathize, check in on people who lead high pressure lives, which is all of us at this point. And not just in a tick box way, but actually dedicate your time. And I know it may be difficult to do that to everyone we meet and we see on social media. So narrow down your circle and put your valued time and energy towards a small few, rather than splintering across thousands of accounts that you follow with when there's actually zero true connection. I start by unfollowing some myself. P.S. Below in the comments are some key mental health charities to look into if you want to learn more or in need of help yourself. Miss England Official. Thank you. Thank you. Basha?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to read what I wrote because yours is so powerful and I don't want to dilute, but your post and the way you wrote that is so in synchrony with the pulse of what I feel. And I just want to thank you for those words. And especially since you and she can understand, like, I can't understand what it's like to have the pressures of, you know, I love looking attractive, but I didn't ever follow that path. Like, so for you to just, I mean, do you have any comments in just hearing your words?
It just took me back to what I was feeling at the time. And in all honesty, I had to be honest in my post that I felt a sense of apathy, and I was wondering where this came from, why I wasn't even hurt or upset or sad. And I think it had started to build up for me because I'd noticed that I would see all these posts of, like, you know, war-torn countries and other tragedies happening around the world. And I'd sort of see it and skip it. And that's what I was sort of doing with a lot of stuff. And I wondered, it can't just be me. I wonder if a lot of people must be feeling the same way, that we're just so saturated with so much content that it no longer bears any relevance. It no longer shocks us when something shocking is happening in the world, whether it's one death or 100 deaths or something horrendous happening to animals or anything, you know. There is just so much that we're clogging up our minds with on a daily. There is only so much that our brains are capable of taking in and doing something with that, in that information, you know. After a point, you know, after seeing, you know, I'm sure you've experienced this, if you've watched lots of horror movies back to back, you no longer feel that sense of horror or that sense of, you know, jump scare or things like that. You just get used to it after a while. And that's really, really tragic that as humans, we're losing one of the best things about us, which is the ability to empathize, to be compassionate. And, this executive mind that we have, and to utilize that to actually emote, we're losing that because of, you know, how fast paced social media is, and then the pace of social media content that we are forced to make and to consume.
So thank you for those words. They're very powerful. I have another series called On Staying Sane that I do with one of my dear friends that I've actually known since we were age 9, fun fact. And she's an Emmy award-winning news reporter, and we talk about mindful ingestion. Mm-hmm. And it's mindful ingestion of everything in our environment, how much social media, what type of fitness routines, what type of nutrition. I love what you wrote in your post about, you know, I talk about my inner circle. You know, there's only so many people that we can have the time to have. I think what we're talking about is having, you just mentioned, I would say, reverent relationships. Mm-hmm. And if we're just constantly hitting likes or doing follows, and it becomes almost habitual from what you were saying, mm-hmm. we are getting desensitized as a collective humanity. And there's almost like a learned helplessness, like another day on planet Earth. So how do we stay sane? How do we stay kind? How do we put our focused intention? And so I can say, I don't know how many hours a day you're working right now, but I know when I was a doctor in training and residency at Emory University, when we were working like 36 hours in a row, and we just get like 3 to 4 hours of sleep, you would have like your pager would go off. They used to have pagers that would ding. Mm-hmm. And you would almost have like another crisis in the emergency and another this. So you almost had to have this professional distance so that you could check the vitals, make sure the patient's safe. But so then you would just get, you need to have, I think as humanity, protective barriers, but then how do you have a deep connection? So there's your role as a doctor, but then there's all of humanity too in different professions. How do we interact with one another to have reverence and to try to have some inner peace and happiness?
100%. And I would like to say that I'm not sure what the situation is in America, but something that's been very, very helpful in the UK has been the European working time deadline for junior doctors, which, you know, limits the amount of hours that we spend at work and are working. And as you said, that fatigue, that mental fatigue, whatever it is a result of, we can really take our ability away to be caring doctors, to actually care for each and every one of our patients and to show that. I mean, I feel the same way on certain days when I'm on nights, for example. And if it's a day where, you know, I'm getting constantly paged and it's constant, I start to almost be like, actually, that can wait. And I don't really want to, I don't feel that empathy. I don't feel that I need to go and give that patient my care and my time. And I think that is so important in our profession, in clinicians' profession, to have that that time off, to have that break, so we can be caring, empathetic professionals again. And I've noticed such a marked difference on the busy days compared to the not so busy days, when my energy and my empathy is just different. I feel better as a doctor. I feel like I've given a better version of myself to my patients. And I like to think that it's received better as well. I mean, I think my patients feel better about the way I am with them on the days I'm better rested and not fatigued and all that, really. And I'd say the same with social media and the saturation that we allow ourselves to get into, essentially.
So there's so much to unpack. I want to ask you about a recent trip you took that was joyful in one moment. I do want to say that I use my social media as almost like prayers for myself, or intentionalities and shout outs. And so one thing that I've learned to do, because I believe, you know, there's the Western understanding of the universe, the Eastern, and then holistic or universal. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like the word empathy is a big theme in what you and I are talking about. Mm-hmm. So I am a high level empath, which serves me well as a doctor. I feel feelings very deeply. Mm-hmm. And so my coping strategy on the day, I kind of went into the suffering and had deep, deep compassion for Chesley, her family. But I wrote this. I am going to read what I wrote, because it's actually like a tool that helped me maneuver that news and alchemize it. I call it alchemy, when you shift the energy. So I wrote, rest in peace, Chesley. Rest in peace, then hashtag awareness, suicide prevention, mental health awareness. When I read this news yesterday, my stomach felt very ill beyond what words can describe. My soul not only felt the level of deep pain and sorrow for her suffering and her loved ones, but for the collective suffering of humanity. I am on the front lines of mental health for over 20 years, and can tell you from my professional and human experience, the level of hopelessness that one feels when they are contemplating suicide is one of despair that words cannot even describe. It's okay to not be okay. It's okay to ask for help. It's okay to say no. It's okay to take time off. It's okay to be human. I believe in eternity, and I'm asking the spirit of Chesley and all the seeds of love, kindness, and inspiration she planted blossom and help others to shine bright, yet be vulnerable and ask for help. Mm-hmm. Every moment we have is sacred. So let's reach out to one another, ask each other how we're doing, check in, allow grace, imperfection, forgiveness, reverence, and feelings. Mm-hmm. With deep condolences, Dr. Denise. Rest in peace, Earth Angel.
Thank you. That was beautiful.
Thank you. And so I have the chakra journal, and I believe in the energy in our heart. So depending, it doesn't matter anywhere in the world, whether you believe in God, Allah, Buddhist, Jesus, you know, different deities in all different religions. The power of love and just remembrance of our ancestors. And I do what's called a sacred pause. So I let myself have the feeling When I hear something like Chesley, then I actually printed out a picture of her and I wrote a prayer. I wrote the prayer that I just said into my journal because I wanted to stay on track, because sometimes it gets so overwhelming to be a mother, be a doctor. And my own son's birth mom side of the family had mental health challenges. So I feel like I'm walking the walk as a doctor, but then also making sure I make the right choices to be the right mother and pick him up and be loving so his mental health thrives. Mm-hmm. So when I read your post and then my post, I said, I just want to meet Dr. Basha because I just felt like your words really resonated with me. And I'll just pause now and let you speak.
Thank you so much for sharing that, that prayer. I don't know really what else to add. And I think, you know, as you said, that sacred pause, sometimes when we truly let ourselves feel and connect with our emotions and connect with the tragedies that are happening around the world. I mean, Chelsea was, as I said, one of so many we've lost to mental health. And as you said, the collective suffering of humanity in general. I am lost for words myself, really, in this moment.
Well, I have a way to shift it because this is energy, right? So I want to show it in real time on the show. Mm-hmm. So we just talked about moments of suffering, moments of crisis. And when I spoke in India at the Dalai Lama's Body Mind Life Conference on nurturing children's mental health, I had to give a presentation, which you can appreciate because you actually know five languages. I don't. And my talk was going to be given, I was going to give it in English, but translated in Tibetan. So I made my, in fact, I will email it to you because I have a feeling you and I will have lots more to talk about on different shows, but about awareness, the fundamentals of mental health, no matter what we believe, are an awareness, self-love, and then altruism. When individuals thrive, we all thrive. Mm-hmm. And we all go through moments of crisis to stabilization to thriving. Mm-hmm. And I was so excited and so happy. You just mentioned the importance of self-care and self-love earlier in the show. And my three themes in all my shows this year are self-care is the new cool, deep play. And I had a dream where it was like, I see things in cursive when I sleep. I saw divine, exquisite, and ethereal and peaceful, deep play, right? Let's have fun. Mm. And then love of all kind. Mm. So I personally had so much joy when I saw you get to go on your vacation and go away and celebrate. Can you tell us about that?
Oh, yes, 100%. I mean, if I told you about the actual holiday, the days before the holiday, I actually remember, and here we're being honest here, so I'll just tell you, at the place I was before the holiday, I was having quite a lot of work-related problems, pressures, so to speak, some personal life stuff, and some that were related to being, you know, a title holder, public persona, really. So there was quite a few things going on, and I was, for you know, I have had depression and anxiety in the past myself, but at this particular time before I went on this holiday, there was a day when I was genuinely like driving home from a late shift at work, and I had some very challenging thoughts where I felt like I just wanted to let my steering wheel go, you know, not thoughts that anyone likes to talk about or anything like that. And I was shocked at how was I, you know, I'm quite a self-aware person, and, you know, sometimes we let our you know, mental health build up to a point where, it, you know, these thoughts can come into our head. And when I finally was able to go on this trip.
Wait, can I just do a pause? Right when you shared that statement, my way, my sensory experience is I have this word neurostyle. We process. I felt, I know it's you and I'm me, but I started to get tears, and my tears were like a deep understanding of just you, like the possibility of even thinking that that's a possibility. Just that deep, like a feeling state of such sadness and a little bit of hopelessness. And what I do when I hear like you, I'm here with you on this show. I like to just tell everyone when you hear something like that, that's like, because you care so much about someone you've never even like met in person, right? And like care, we're having this moment. Mm. I'm going to take a deep breath. And I'm putting my hand on my heart.
Mm.
And I'm sending you love across the pond. I'm sending love to myself. And I'm sending love to anyone listening.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
It's a big vulnerable share.
Yeah, 100%. It was a tough time. And, you know, I'm glad I came over that. You know, to be honest, this trip that I was going on was another commitment as part of Miss England. So at the time, and I think this would probably something a lot of people would relate to, that sometimes when we're going through those times, even things that would be helpful potentially, like getting away from that situation, a break, self-care, even those things take so much motivation to do. For me, well,
especially since you know you have to put outfits together, makeup together.
Precisely.
For me as a female, if I were in your position, I would want to just clap my hands like the clapper, this like old school clap on, clap off, have someone just pack my suitcase. I would get stressed. Sometimes it's easier for me to handle patient crises than pack a suitcase to look beautiful for all those days, especially being Miss England. I can't imagine.
Trust me, I cannot tell you that's exactly how I felt. I was struggling to sort my leave out according to the dates that we had this trip organized. I had a set of night shifts that I wanted to swap out, and in the end I didn't get to swap, so I came straight from the trip to the night shifts. But at that time I remember thinking, I don't even want to go on this trip. I just said, I'll just let my brother go. I'll just, you know, somebody else go instead of me. I can't even be bothered to go on this trip that I'd been waiting 2 years to go on. Because even that felt like an effort. And when I went on this trip, I did go completely blank with no expectations and a sense of apathy. I was just a bit like, yeah, whatever. I'll just go because I have to and blah, blah, blah. And I think that's what really took me by surprise. When I actually got there, I was able to go there with no expectations and really just connect with the moment and the present. And I made it a point, because I'm a very much of a...
By the way, can I tell you that some of my favorite... when you play... And I think it's we're our happiest when we're in our most creative space and we're being our own best friend. Mm-hmm. And that is when we find it. And like we said earlier, the gratitude or the moment of now. Mm-hmm. I want to hear you say it. But when I saw your reels and just your happiness, there was a freedom, and it didn't feel like a forced, like, oh, I just need to look gorgeous and beautiful because this is this trip. Mm-hmm. There were moments of just pure joy and play that came through on your reels. Is that how you were feeling, or was that an act?
It was how I was feeling, and that's actually for a few months prior to that trip, I was really struggling to put out content, because it was just, you know, because it's a creative space, Instagram, social media is, and you have to feel creative, and people who are creative, it has to come from a place of a joy or some deep emotion or something like that. And it's really difficult to curate those emotions if you're not really feeling them. And there's a sense when you are going through depression, and you would know this, it's not always this deep sadness. It's actually this numbness, this flat affect, you know? Do you know what I mean?
Oh my gosh, absolutely. And I know it as a doctor. I've never been on any psychiatric meds myself, but I call it neurostyle. You and I'll have to do it. We'll discuss that another time, but I came up with a non-stigmatizing, I'll talk about it just a little bit, that it's though we all process and perceive our environment in our own unique way. Mm-hmm. And so I would say my neurostyle, if we were talking Western descriptions, Western medicine, then I can talk more universe, is that I'm blessed to have a little bit of that hypomanic, where I'm not full-blown manic, but I have these energy bursts that are so creative and so amazing. Mm. And then I'm an empath, so I feel people's feelings. And so I need to do a lot of swimming and time in nature. There's no way I could be a psychiatrist now and not live where I live, because I think I would be so depressed listening to everyone's problems all the time and not getting out in nature and praying to God. And mine is all encompassing. It's like all the ascended masters. So this flat affect or this emotional disconnect, there was a time, and I don't know if people can relate, you don't have to have full blown diagnosable depression. You can have major depression, low grade depression, episodes of depression. So of course, anyone listening, I'll make sure I put, when I launch the show, the suicide prevention number, as well as maybe you could give me the referrals in the United Kingdom and I'll give ones in the United States. But I have to tell you, when you said, can I relate? There was a couple times during the pandemic where I felt like someone almost like shot molasses in my veins, where it was harder to get through the day. And I was like, how much of this is the collective consciousness of the pandemic? How much of this is that I have to listen to anywhere from 4 to 8 people or 5 to 8 people a day that may or may not have severe issues? And how much am I, you know, doing self-care in between appointments so I don't take on their suffering? And so I've had moments where I'm like, okay, must go to the pool, must get dressed. Like even before, I was so excited to have this interview with you, but I made sure I had like a little healthy protein cookie. And I have like a little fresh drink next to me of kombucha and alkalinized water. And so I have felt almost like this unbelievable overwhelm that sometimes you have to like, almost like when you're starting your car, you have to like get the engine going, but sometimes you just feel a little bit paralyzed. I'm not saying that's the same mood state you were describing, but I don't know if you can relate to this or any of what I'm saying.
I definitely empathize with you know, that whole giving yourself those structured sort of tasks throughout the day to make sure that you don't just fall off the hook. I've definitely done that. And I think that's, again, because I do have anxiety as well. I'm someone who beats myself up a lot when I don't, you know, like get the things done that I set myself out to do, you know. But at the same time, you know, a big part of me was suffering. I was really sad that I was not having any energy left to create, to create content, for example. I felt so lackluster in myself because I felt like drained completely of all my energy, just trying to do the bare minimum every day. And for me, it was turning up to work because, you know, that's something that I have to do. Whereas social media, the creative side of things, that's a more of a self-love, self-care side of thing. It's more of a luxury. It's not something I have to do every day. It's not like brushing my teeth. Right. You know, I choose to do those things. And where choice was coming in, anything that I had to choose to do, I was just not choosing to do because I couldn't get myself to. So I understand to some degree where you're coming from.
Well, I had a situation, and maybe this will be for... because I have a feeling you and I had no, by the way, I had no idea. And I'm so like, I'm just in the moment of now having gratitude for you sharing your vulnerability with your emotional state. So this in the moment of now, like to me, like, I'm like, wow, that was, have you been able to get any sort of support you need from friends or families or anyone to help with how you're coping currently with being a doctor and everything we just spoke about?
100%. I will say that I've been very fortunate to, you know, I have very supportive people around me, but also I've been through these sort of bouts before. So I have some of those tools where I know where things are going wrong. And I remember that, as I described, that particular night when everything was falling off the hook. I recognize it was sort of like my
rock bottom. The night of the steering wheel, the drive home?
Yeah, okay. It was a really late shift. And, you know, I remember having a panic attack. Grocery store just after work. It was about 9:30 in the evening, and I was trying so hard to hold my panic attack from happening in the shopping store.
And I went and had it in my car. And I remember like my hands shaking and driving home. And I was crying on the way home so much. And I realized that night that it can't get any worse than this. I've had this horrendous feeling. And for me, sometimes when I've hit rock bottom, then I start to, like, my executive function brain kicks into action a little bit, and I start thinking, okay, let's break this down and think about all the issues that are, you know, affecting me right now. What can I do about it? And let's just go ahead and take some action. And I think that's what helped me. It doesn't happen overnight. You sort of have to, you know, slowly chip away at all those things that are bothering you. But, you know, I've learned to sort of realize that, yes, of course, it's important to recognize your emotions and that, but also the importance of being action oriented, not just reaction oriented. And that's what I started doing from that point on. And I think it did get better. Because, you know, as I say, it really hit that crescendo point of recovery for me to some degree when I went on that holiday and had that complete, you know, like refresh button for my head. And I was able to connect with nature and really be present in the moment. For me, I've realized one of the things that is crucial to me is sunlight. I have SAD, so, you know, just the fact that I was going into work before it was sunlight and coming back from work after it was sunset, that was really, really like affecting me. And just being in the sunlight in Mauritius, it helped so much.
So I grew up in the Chicago area in the Midwest, and the weather's pretty similar to England. And even in Southern Cal, I live in Southern Cal, when the days get shorter, people in my practice do suffer from seasonal affective disorder. And I have one of those lights, those lamps. I haven't needed to use it because I feel very blessed. I did not do my midday swim. I'm going to do a night swim tonight. Mm-hmm. But for me, being in nature, being outside, being in the sun, but I also do a lot of deep prayer, and I call it laps of love. Mm-hmm. I do laps of love in the pool. I will put you in my prayers. Like, you're in my field now. And I think as a doctor going through training, have you ever used one of those lights? Do you know what I'm talking about?
I have a sunset light. It's just there if I need it. Mm-hmm. It's sort of, you know, like many of my tools now, you know, in the process, I think the pandemic really helped me understand all the different things that I could do. So I wouldn't feel that, you know, that helplessness feeling. And, you know, going through therapy helped with that as well, knowing that you have the tools. So if one doesn't work, you can try something else. And, you know, not thinking that your problem's this massive thing that can consume you, and knowing that there are little things that you can do to chip away at that problem. And I surround myself with those things. And as you were saying, being in nature is so important to you. I'm not an outdoorsy person at all. Maybe if I grew up in a sunnier place, better weather, I would probably be an outdoor mm-hmm. person. But I definitely realized during the pandemic how good it feels to get your hands dirty, in the sense of like doing gardening. So I have lots of plants that I sometimes, when it's a particularly horrible day or something like that, and I just want to, I've got a bit of time, I'll just start playing and just doing a bit of repotting and just looking after just some pruning and that kind of stuff with my indoor plants. And that gives me so much of that mindfulness sensation. I love it.
Well, that is such a great tip. For me, doing shows and being inspired and feeling like we're all in this together and having this time with you is part of my creativity. Mm-hmm. And I've been doing many, many shows. And I've also, just so you know, I've said no to different opportunities that would change my lifestyle, that wouldn't allow me the freedom to be with my son, the freedom to make my own schedule, because I love media. I love shows. And for me to connect with someone like you across the pond and then see how we can, you know, offline discuss anything else we can do. It's kind of neat to think that we have the ability to do podcasts and workshops all across the globe and attract what I'd call an energy tribe, because I had no idea. And I just want to thank you. Like, I didn't know you and I didn't talk about this when we spoke briefly. No. Right? We didn't. So is this surprising to you about our conversation? I mean, I'm here with you right now. Are you kind of blown away or not blown away?
I am, but at the same time, I feel like I knew there was going to be an element of honesty and truth telling that would be a part of this interview, this conversation, just from the topics and the topic of Chelsea and mental health. And, you know, it's I find it best. I mean, I have witnessed mental health in others, of course, but I find it the most easy to talk about my own personal experiences. And I think that's what empathy is, isn't it? It's relating somebody else, like, you know, putting yourself in somebody else's shoes, getting an understanding of what it must feel like to have those feelings as somebody else. So I knew that we might be going into this conversation. I'm really glad that we did talk about these topics, because I think it's important to talk about vulnerabilities and coping strategies, really.
Thank you. And I didn't know I was going to, I don't plan my shows. This isn't for everyone to understand. My process is very intuitive, and I just knew I had the honor of getting to know you more. And you and I even said, because we were having so much fun on our call and it was already late and you already had the car emergency. And I was like, I even said to you, I'm being protective of you. And then I just want to give you credit. We were so resilient. I had like an internet down. You and I were like determined to talk. So I feel like I feel like we're kindred spirits of like the show must go on. And also like the empathy, and also like, you know, one of my artists does the asset for the show. It's going to launch Friday, you know, in a couple of days after this. So when everyone's listening, shout out, it'll be weekend, but it's so fun how we can look all made up and gorgeous. And then I think we're living in a time where people are starting to talk about their inner world and this vulnerability of the human experience, that we might make assumptions about, oh, it's Dr. Basha, Miss England, or Dr. Denise. And, you know, it's so nice when we can just say we have sad days where we want to cry. And I just want to say something that's really important for you to know. Is there anything you want to say before I say anything else?
No, please go ahead.
I just want you to know, I know you're way across the pond, and this is show one in our beginning of our energy exchange and talking, and you obviously would talk to anyone you need to there, but I really mean this. Like, you can literally text me or call me in as a friend. I mean, this is like when you just mentioned that, and that keeping in the circle small or having reverence. Mm-hmm. So I'm one of your angels now.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
You can't get rid of me.
Thank you. And I think that I'd say the same. Likewise, I think sometimes the most difficult part is reaching out. I don't think anybody, if someone truly was to reach out and truly genuinely ask for help, I don't think humans have it in them to deny the help. We all have a part of us that wants to be altruistic, that wants to be the good person, the good Samaritan, and help another person out. We all like that feeling of being able to help somebody out. So I think what it boils down to is us overcoming our own egos and our own sort of pride that we have of asking for that help and genuinely, you know, reaching out. So I think that's another thing that we can all take away, that we should sometimes just talk about it, just ask somebody. And that's a mental note for myself, that I usually would, you know, the last thing I would do is ask that help of like my friends or anybody like that. So thank you for the offer. And I would say likewise for yourself. You know, if you ever need to talk, I don't know what I could possibly offer, but
oh,
I would
you can
try
offer
to listen
a lot
at least.
Because I have that, what you're just talking about, I have a little bit of that. I'm trying to get better at the Wonder Woman syndrome. So I usually just go to the pool. I have these really inexpensive, cutest ever bathing suits I found on Amazon. And I, my own bourgeois, like equivalent of looking hot, like you do in the Miss England outfits, are these really cute bathing suits I wear. And it's for myself and my own self-love. And then I usually just pray to my higher power. Yeah. I do reach out to my mother, and I have another dear, dear friend where we know each other's kind of trials and tribulations, and I'm strategically single, so we have like fun little girlfriend session. But it, the old me, like over many years ago, wasn't as vulnerable because society wasn't at a place where this is more okay. But sometimes your own neurostyle can be so strong because you're so used to being, you're the doctor. In fact, it's interesting, when I did the slip at the beginning of the show calling you the director, do you feel like you command, I mean, I know from seeing your just who you are, but don't you have such a strong, bold, directing, like you got this demeanor?
I mean, it's difficult for me to say how I'm perceived.
I meant in a good way, like a strong woman.
Of course, of course. I'd like to think so. I mean, I think that particular aspect, I like it, but I think early on in your career, when you're a junior doctor, it can be a little bit difficult. I'm not sure if you have much of that, but I have experienced sexism at work myself, and I know that as a woman, in certain situations, I have to sort of tone myself down, and I've definitely adopted that style in certain areas of work that I've worked in, and that's one of the reasons why I see myself going into family medicine, where you're sort of your own boss in a way, and you can then, you know, curate your own practice how you like to. And I mean, that might make me sound like I'm not much of a team person, but I think when you are a woman who has strong presence, whether even it's even a perception of a strong presence, because people might see you on social media, they might recognize you, and then they might see you at work, and then they have an instant idea in their head. I think that can be quite obstructive in your career sometimes as a woman. That has been my experience.
Wow, I feel like we've already done two shows in one, and what you just said so power-packed. I will tell you that when I was your age range as a new doctor, and you mentioned some sexism, when I look back at the outfits I wore in my mid-20s to like late-20s, just so that I wouldn't get the male attention, I mean, the outfits were hilarious. I wore like little frocks, so I was just trying to have people look at my eyes and listen to what I had to say intellectually. So I do understand that, and I did choose, and it's interesting to look back now, I just naturally followed psychiatry. It was my absolute right profession. I did adult and child psychiatry. But instead of right after training going to work for someone, I put a shingle up and I was my own boss. And then I didn't have to deal with the politics of power, the politics of sexism. And I could just be in my own flow of love and service and be the doctor I wanted to be. And I'm sure some of my experiences where I had different doctors. This is for another show. We'll have to do part two or part three or at some point. I mean, I've got hilarious stories of how not to, like how to have a sexual advance happen and how to make a man not feel like an idiot. Like I have a bunch of funny stories. I don't know. I mean, like how to maneuver work situations that are very uncomfortable so that you can stay at the top of your game as a doctor. I mean, I'm sure you have a story. I mean, I think I can give one. Should I just, I don't even know at this point. Can I give one fast story about that?
Go ahead.
Oh my goodness. So in your training, you often have, for anyone listening, this can happen in the workplace, whether you're a doctor or not, if there's a power play of a boss relationship. So when you're a young doctor, you have attending physicians and senior residents that you have to sign out to. Mm-hmm. And at the time I was on call with this man who for sure made sure he let me know he thought I was attractive. Mm-hmm. And then I didn't really do any flirting. I just did a good job with my patient rounds, my notes. And we had to share a call room together, not in the same, there was this fake wall put up. And he made some comment that I don't need to go into. And I thought, oh no, this is not going to be good. And so what I did, Basha, is when we had a break and we were in the cafeteria and we were having coffee, This is a married man, by the way. And I asked to see pictures of his wife and kids to take interest. And I said, oh my God. And I remember his wife was an attorney. She was gorgeous. Mm-hmm. And I said to him, oh my goodness, your wife is so beautiful and your children are just lovely. Mm-hmm. And I said, thank you for letting me know you're interested and attracted. But number one, I would never do anything to hurt another woman. Number two, she just looks so lovely. And number three, thank you for letting me know you find me attractive, but it's just not something I could do. So do you see how I kind of disarmed it?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. 100%. I mean, I think we've moved somewhere in a better place to some degree, where at least in the NHS I can say that there is definitely some intolerance for any kind of particularly sexually inappropriate behaviour. If that is what you're alluding to, but that is another thing. You know, sometimes it isn't even just about. To some degree, it would be easier to know if that, that was it. Like, someone was attracted to me. There's a lot of underhand sexism that is passive-aggressive sexism from other female colleagues and preferential behaviours towards male colleagues, which I've experienced, undermining of female doctors and female doctors, I'd say. So that's been sort of my main experience of sexism, so to speak. Of course, I have had other advances and stuff, but you sort of learn how to sort of take it in good spirit and sort of very playfully disarm them, essentially. Yes. And I don't mind that, to be honest. I've had that some degree in different aspects of my life, whether in media career as well, so I know how to handle that. I think sometimes what is more difficult is getting that sexism from female colleagues, when they have certain preferential treatment that they show towards male colleagues over you and don't credit you for your work and that kind of thing, what I mean?
Absolutely. Well, I feel very fortunate to have all this time with you. And I feel like I have many other things I'd like to talk with you on show and off show. I'm so grateful for our time today. Can you let everyone know where they can find you on social media?
Absolutely. I'm quite active on Instagram, but I do have TikTok, Facebook, and Twitter. But Instagram's sort of my main platform, and you can just look me up as Basha Mukherjee. You spell that as B for Bravo, H-A-S-H-A, and then my last name is M-U-K-H-E-R-J-E-E. It's just literally my name, and you should be able to find me on all these platforms.
Thank you for our time today. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Thank you, Dr. Basha.
Thank you so much, Dr. Peace.